Florida Telehealth Foundation is proud to introduce you to Do Good Volunteer of the Month, Patrick Dietrich from Superior Search and Rescue. Patrick volunteers his time to train outside the area and bring it back to the team. The new training programs have been a huge help. During several missing person searches, his knowledge on building search tactics helped make searches successful. If you know an incredible volunteer like Patrick, go to dogoodcc.org and nominate them to be recognized as the next Do Good in the Copper Country Volunteer of the Month.
Welcome back to segment two of Copper Country Today. And if you missed segment one, I'll again wish moms happy Mother's Day on this Sunday morning. We're brought to you by the Portage Health Foundation. Learn more about them at phfgive.org. It's been a busy time at Michigan Tech, and I thought it was time that we caught up now that we have graduation in the rearview mirror and Board of Trustees meeting in the rearview mirror. Rick Kubek, the president of Michigan Tech, joins me on the program. Welcome back, sir.
Yep, thanks for having me back.
The big news, of course, has been the adoption of Finlandia University's nursing program, and I think probably we start there and we talk about how that came about when Finlandia announced that they were closing. It didn't take long to hear from you guys that you were going to take that on.
Right. When we heard that Finlandia was closing, first of all, you know, our hearts went out to the students and the faculty, such a legacy for the community.
Yeah.
But also the loss of the nursing program would really have a deleterious effect at our, you know, in our area. So we did get on the phone with the local hospitals just to get a read on what that impact would have been, and it would have been unacceptable.
Now, I had a little tangential with college programs, things of that nature, enough to know that it is not necessarily an easy thing to do to suddenly set up a new area of study. You have to get approval from on high. You have to talk with the teachers union, I would assume, the professors union, because you're bringing new staff in and you're probably not, in fact, we know you're not going through the regular hiring process that you would normally go to try to screen people. You're taking the whole staff in. How challenging was that?
So, first of all, to start, the nursing faculty that were at Finlandia were excellent. And so having them move over to Michigan Tech was really not going to be an issue, although we do have processes that we follow. Really, the heroes in this process are the staff in the provost's office, be able to write the proposals, and our faculty and the university senate. They passed that curriculum at lightning speed, and they all pitched in to do it. You're right, it's a lot of work. It's a lot of work. And right toward the end of the semester, with everything else the faculty had to do, they put their shoulder behind to be sure to get this done. When you talk to them, though, it's because they really cared about the community and the importance of keeping this going. And the Finlandia faculty also have been very helpful in that process. So as you said, there's lots of stages of accreditation, and we've got interim, temporary, whatever you want to call it, approval to get started until the final site visit, which is coming up pretty soon.
And this will be located on the existing Michigan Tech campus.
That's correct. We're setting up labs as we speak.
Okay.
For the nursing students.
Because that's one of the questions that I was immediately asked is, well, will they keep it in Hervin and Hall or will they move it onto their own campus? Why decide to move it onto the Tech campus instead of perhaps establishing a satellite location?
Well, as you can imagine, we're going to move it into the Department of Biological Sciences right now, and having those faculty co-located by their peers, I think will have a plus. Having the students here will be a plus sign, and kind of integrating it within the culture of Michigan Tech is important for us as well, because while it's moving from Finlandia, it will be a Michigan Tech nursing degree.
Yeah, now Finlandia had various levels of nursing degrees. You could go for a few months and get your starter. Yeah, I'm not quite sure what all the initials they use and the levels of that, but not all of those were four-year degrees. Michigan Tech has typically only offered four-year degrees or graduate study. So how do you integrate those interim degrees into your curriculum?
So you raise a great point. It's kind of like a triage, you know. Step number one is to get the four-year degree over here, get it established, get the faculty set up, get the labs set up, make sure the students are part of our system and get all the accreditation. That's what we're focusing right now. And then we'll take a pause and take a look back at which of those other elements, really fit Michigan Tech's mission.
Okay, so the assistance programs of and such, not going to be happening right away at least?
Right. We're going to get this set up and do it right and then see what other parts fit, within where they want to go in the future, the nursing faculty.
Okay. Were there any other parts of what Finlandia was offering that you looked at and said, no, maybe we could bring them in? It didn't look like most of the rest of the curriculum would be a very good fit.
No, really our focus was mostly on the students and making sure that they could seamlessly come over to Michigan Tech if they, you know, if they chose to do that. We were one of the universities that agreed to these articulation, you know, transfer agreements.
Is there a trick to that? Because typically I know if somebody transfers in, credits have to approve, things of that nature. Was there a trick to just saying, okay, whatever you've done, we'll take it?
That's correct. Part of the agreement with what's called the Higher Learning Commission, we call it HLC, which is our accreditation process. When schools go through this process of closing down, a set of universities can make the agreement to take those students. And so it's a bit of a streamlined process now. To be sure, again, we don't want those students to miss a beat. The focus has been on helping the students succeed. If they end up at Tech, they end up somewhere else, that's okay.
And I'm assuming that perhaps some of those students might not have met your original admission criteria because Finlandia's bar was set perhaps a little bit lower than Tech's.
So you're right, there wasn't an admissions floor for the students that were coming over. So our focus will be sure that they, you know, that they succeed when they're here.
All right. And for those Finlandia students that are coming in, are there some counselors set? Are there some people at this point who are working with them to say, okay, here's how it's going to work?
Yeah, absolutely. And in fact, there's a counselor that's set up exclusively to help, you know, the Finlandia students. And it turned out, coincidentally, I found out she used to work as a counselor in Finlandia.
Well, that works.
So I think it works pretty clean for them.
That works then.
Yeah.
Finlandia is not the only small school in the region that is closing. I mean, as lightly as I follow this, I see Presentation College in the Twin Cities is closing. Iowa Wesleyan University, a private school with a long heritage, is closing. Cardinal Stritch University in Milwaukee is closing down. We are looking at a landscape that, and we've talked about this before, a landscape that is changing. There are fewer high school seniors coming out. There are more of those opting for other options, trades and things of that nature. So there's a smaller pool for our universities to draw from. How big a challenge does this become to keep Michigan Tech growing in the face of a declining pool?
So you're right. I mean, we've been talking about this demographic cliff for quite a while, and now it's upon us, and certainly in the state of Michigan and Wisconsin and on the East Coast, you see it particularly so. But part of that as well is a focus on the value that comes from your degree. So in addition to the pool certainly shrinking, it's still a big pool, Todd.
Yeah.
You know, there's still a lot of students. But you see continued conversations about, but what am I going to do with my degree and how much value is there if I put the 4 years in and the money and the tuition? This is where Tech really excels, you know. I mean, as you know, I mean, it's always one of the top 20 schools with regard to best value, best ROI. So the higher education landscape, indeed, there's fewer students. There's still a lot. But the emphasis on getting your, you know, your return on your investment and an excellent education, that suits Tech very well because that's, you know, that's always been our wheelhouse and we haven't changed that.
Well, the average salary of a graduate from Michigan Tech, the last time I saw a figure, I think, and this was several years ago, was $65,000 a year, which makes that student loan payment relatively affordable. If you go to a college and you come out with a degree, like say in broadcast and cinematic arts, that debt load is not quite so manageable, so you do have an edge there.
Sure, and in fact, they have statistics regarding, you know, how many defaults you have on your federal loans and the like, and Michigan Tech is always right near the very bottom with regard to things like that. Our students pay their loans, student loans back, those that have them.
How do we work to reduce that debt load? I have a grandson who's graduating from high school in a couple of weeks going on, and fortunately for him, has a full ride to the University of Michigan. So he's not going to be worrying too much about student loans, but his classmates, they're going to be facing some potentially big debt. How can we reduce that debt?
Right. Well, part of that is to encourage our citizens to talk to their legislatures regarding supporting higher education. If you really look at what's happened over the years, the shift has really gone from being kind of what they would, you know, call a public good, which is that it was good for society to have
when I was in college graduates. When I was in college in the mid-70s, state government covered 80% of my tuition. And I believe tuition rates kind of got close to $20 per credit.
Well,
yeah, my senior year at Central Michigan University. Now, mm-hmm. state government covers what, 15% or less?
You're in 15, 20, you're in that range now. So really, if you look at all the tables, and there is a recent report by the Citizens Action Council that points this out, that's been the big tipping point, that the cost of higher education has, while it's not necessarily gone up, quote unquote, the cost has been shifted to the, you know, to the students.
Yeah, because I see universities working very studiously to try to keep their tuition increases to inflation or maybe just a little bit above, depending on what's going on. Universities are like anybody else. They seem to have government mandates that get thrown on them to provide this, that, and the other thing, and no money comes to support. But you're right. It's not so much the yearly increase. It is the yearly shift away from government supporting and onto the student having to pay for it.
Yep, and I will say the last couple of years we've seen our legislature supporting higher education. So I want to be sure you know that we really appreciate what they have done in the last couple of years. But just a note on this as well is that at Michigan Tech we want to continue to be a good value. So it does mean we need to make the investments necessary to continue to offer that very high quality education, which means that we're able to attract and retain top faculty. We're able to provide the students with premier facilities. So there are expenses to that, and we all have to accept that as well.
Talking with Brett Kubek, who is the president of Michigan Tech, one of those investments that was approved by your board of trustees a few days ago, a new dormitory. I suppose the old dormitory like I stayed in many years ago in college with three guys in one wing and two guys in the other and a shared bathroom and a shared study space and such, I suppose that doesn't play as well with students today.
Well, you know, as you said, the Michigan Tech is one of the few schools, frankly, that continues to grow in the current, in the current higher education environment. And we're just reaching a point that it's necessary to get some additional housing for our students. And so, to your point, the Board of Trustees has approved what we call kind of a pre-planning agreement. So we have not yet had approval of the actual dorm, but approval to begin conversations to put up the actual dorm.
The concept is in play.
Yes, the concept is in play, for sure.
So, and you're going to put it in the Rose parking lot? Really? I mean, I know you're a little bit landlocked, but where are people going to park when they go to see the Chassel Country Western show, for example?
Well, I'm glad you asked that question because you were not the first, Todd, since it came out in the paper. Yeah, so we're working on that plan. I can tell you, I just looked at it this morning, and actually, by the time we're done, there will probably be a few more parking spots than was available before. Having said that, it's probably going to be configured a little differently than it currently is, but it doesn't mean there won't be parking. The parking's going to be there, but it will probably be configured a little differently. For example, making better use of the lots that faculty vacate in the, after work. Think about what we do in the SDC. We got the Husky Club, right?
Yeah.
So, yes, there will be parking. We're working on that plan. It's not done yet. But we all have to realize
it's all still in a concept stage.
Yeah, and that's prime, quote-unquote, real estate. So we're going to make it work. We deeply believe in the mission of the Rose, and we're going to protect that.
Is there a little pressure that comes with putting up a new dorm to say, okay, now, in the face of declining enrollments across the nation, we got to make sure we fill this thing?
Okay, so we could actually fill it today. So during this, during the growth that we've already experienced, we've had to do things like triple up that we normally wouldn't have to do. So right now we're pretty jammed up, places that we would have used for graduate students, perhaps we have a few undergraduates in there. So we have the capacity now.
Okay.
If we kind of loosen our belt a little bit, we could pretty well fill that.
Okay, because the thought had crossed my mind,
yes.
There's obviously a lot of private student housing around Michigan Tech. One of the things that we're looking at across the area is a little bit of a problem with affordable and available housing. Rental prices have gone up. It's very difficult to find any homes on the market, particularly in the low to middle income price ranges. You put up another structure, maybe that opens up a few places.
Well, I hope so, because that's also an issue we hear about on campus with regard to hiring. I was in an event yesterday in Marquette, and they were talking about one of the number one constraints for economic development in the UP right now is affordable housing.
Yeah, and it's been an odd thing for this area to have to address, because this area had a surplus of housing for so many years. The mines emptied out, and shut down, and people left the area. What from the south we talked about was a northern migration to come up and work in the automotive industries. We had our own version of that, a southern migration. People went down. There were extra houses here until just a few years ago, and all of a sudden now we're facing for the first time a housing shortage, and it's been kind of a tough nut to crack, I think. So maybe this helps a little bit in terms of putting up a little bit more housing for the university
and
there.
We encourage the private developers to continue with putting private student housing. I want to be sure they know that there will be students there for them.
You're not out to pull the rug out from under them?
No. In fact, we've been very clear about that. You know, we depend on them, and the university depends on them.
You are a little bit landlocked at this point in terms, I mean, I know you've got area up past the SDC, you've got land up there, but in terms of student population that frequently does a lot of walking to class in weather that's not really good walking weather, you don't have a whole lot of space right adjacent to campus to put something like this.
So you're right, that was one of the first spaces that our master plan identified as a location. They have another space or two, if we ever get in the future, past my time, to put up another dorm. There's some sites located in the master plan.
Okay. Yeah, because they've got to be squeezing things in at this point. And it's a lovely place, obviously, a lovely site along the canal there, and obviously makes sense with the Great Lakes Research Center and things to have that waterfront access. But the hills and the terrain here kind of work against you in some regards.
Yes. Yep.
So let's talk about the future. What programs now do you see growing? What programs do you see being the engines for this university over the next 10 to 15 years?
Yeah. So, of course, nursing.
Yep.
You knew I'd say that.
That one's new.
See that? You know, to see that one growing. I mean, in 2019, 20, we started the new College of Computing, which, by the way, was the first College of Computing in the state of Michigan.
I remember that, yes.
I expect to see that to continue.
My question at the time was, what took anybody so long? I mean, gosh, you know, we're recording this show on a computer right now. There's more computer power in front of me right now talking to you than flew astronauts to the moon. And we're all using it. Obviously, universities taught computing at a whole bunch of different levels, but to have a dedicated college for it just seemed a natural idea.
There's so many neat new degree programs coming out, though. When I look at what the University Senate passes, 30, 40, 50 resolutions and new degree programs a year, I can tell you from my experience, that's a very active group of faculty staying very contemporary. You think about, what they do in forestry, and, you would think you're talking in a biology department. It's really cutting-edge stuff. I mean, you go to our science and arts college, and they're working on, the role that sociology and the like plays with regard to implementations of technology. And, you read about what's happened in AI. That's what they're studying right now. So we're really staying on the contemporary edge. So I think you'll see all of the colleges continue to grow. And if you look at our, our profile right now, that's what's happening.
What are the criteria that come into play when they consider, we ought to offer a degree in that? Or conversely, nobody's really studying this anymore. Nobody's using this option. Maybe we should retire it.
Right. So the second one's easy. Nobody's studying it. Okay. The way it goes.
On the other hand, you can say we still think it's worthy. Maybe we should try to do a little recruiting or pushing people into it. But obviously, for the most part, if it's not being used, it's probably not needed. But how do you look at developing a new criteria? And does it need new classes, or is it just a combination of existing classes across maybe a couple of departments or schools?
Yeah, earlier I had mentioned the criticality of maintaining an excellent faculty and being sure we can recruit them and keep them here. And so when you have a great faculty, like we have at Michigan Tech, right, they're trained to see the future and where kind of the old saying, where the puck's going to be.
Yeah.
And so they'll start very early on the sorts of curricular innovations that need to happen in their department to begin the planning. So the planning really begins organically in the academic units where the expertise resides, and then it matriculates its way up. And, in an ideal situation, we're kind of there when the enrollment starts. I would say computing's an example of that.
Yeah, and much is made about time that faculty spend doing other things than teaching, being involved in groups that represent their interest, publishing papers, doing research and such. that's where a lot of that comes from, I suspect.
Right. So teaching is certainly the critical part, and that's what we excel at. At Michigan Tech, actually, I'll just pause a second and say this. One of the things that I just find remarkable all the time is that you have people that are world-class scholars and go anywhere, but they really want to get to know their students and teach them in classes that are 30, not 300.
Yeah.
And that's the type of faculty member you get at Michigan Tech. Because of that, you know, they're passionate about making sure what they're teaching is contemporary. It always seems to go back to having awesome faculty that are, you know, pushing the envelope like these do.
And it can be a challenge, I suspect, getting them here. We're a little bit off the beaten track. That is our charm. And I know a lot of your faculty members who just love living here because they love the outdoors. They ski, they snowshoe, they hike in the summer, they bike, that kind of thing, which maybe you don't get to do so much at the University of Michigan or Michigan State. But I suppose that when somebody gets a call from Michigan Tech and they look on the map, there's probably a little bit of a pause of breath.
Yeah, maybe so, but maybe I have the wrong attitude here. But in my opinion, if you get an offer from Michigan Tech, you should be thanking us. I mean, this is an awesome place to live and an awesome place to be and a great place to raise your family. You know, and if you have an opportunity to do it here, you know, lucky you.
Well, and you mentioned, obviously, the housing situation, but it's a heck of a lot cheaper to buy a house here than it is in Ann Arbor.
Yeah, and it's tough everywhere, though, so it's not as if we're an outlier with regard to the housing situation.
Yeah, so we've got growth for the university, which is good. How much of a role does the foreign student population play in that growth?
The international students have always been an important part, particularly of our graduate program, and I suspect that will continue to go. There was a downturn, of course, during the pandemic, and that's
sure.
That we kind of got back to where we were before that. But we noticed this last year or so, we're seeing an increase in international undergraduate students as well, which I find very encouraging. I think it represents the reputation of the institution continuing to grow, not just within the U.S., but also, you know, internationally.
I think you're right, because, and I've said this before, Michigan Tech is not an easy place to get to from India or China or Japan or any place like that. I mean, it's one thing to fly from New Delhi to Los Angeles and study at UCLA. It's another thing to fly from New Delhi to Los Angeles to Chicago to Houghton and be a long ways away from your family and not have a lot of resources close by. Those students who come here must be very, very dedicated and committed to what they're doing and very, very impressed with this place.
That's my sense in talking to all of our students, and I have to give hats off to the community that they build here as well, you know, that we get to be a part of. Even like you think about the Parade of Nations,
yeah.
How wonderful that is for the community to have, you know, such a diverse group of students here studying at Tech.
And I frequently see international students. I assume they're international students. They are talking different languages. I'm shopping at Totics or Pat's or someplace like that. There they are. They're talking different languages. I so want to go over and tap them on the shoulder and say, where are you from? Hi. And you don't want to intrude. But it is a great community. And the Parade of Nations is going to be great to see that kind of getting back more towards normal this fall. Some of the entertainment is going to be back with it. More of the international food is going to be back with it because it's such a big part of the university and it adds such color to our community. And I don't mean that in terms of skin. I mean it in terms of variety and enjoyment. So we've got that'll be coming up. How busy over the summer at the university? How many students stay?
Oh, I don't have the exact number. Probably about 20%.
Okay.
You know, because we're, you know, a STEM-oriented school, a lot of our students do co-ops and internships over the summer as part of their, you know, their experience as a, you know, an engineering student. And so perhaps even more than other schools, our students are out working in the summer in jobs that they'll eventually, you know, be applying for.
Okay, and many of them, I suppose, in their hometowns, because so many of those students are not from here. This is not a commuter school. Obviously, there are local students, but this is not a commuter school as, say, Northern Michigan is, with more students from the area, or particularly downstate, Western Michigan or Central Michigan, where a lot of students live within an hour of the university campus.
Yeah, we have students from Florida, Texas, California, Colorado, New Jersey. I could just go down the list of almost every state, but clearly they're coming from all around.
All here in our little neighborhood.
Right.
Brings us to the end of the segment. Rick Kobach, president of Michigan Tech, thank you for the update. Continued good luck with that nursing school. And I think the community certainly thanks you for stepping in on that. We need those nurses and look forward to having a good supply of well-trained healthcare professionals.
Thank you.